Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday, the 13th of January. This hour of the program, we had scheduled an open line, but considering what happened last night with the memorial service in Tucson, considering the fact that we have talked with each other, at least I've been here for some 18 years, and we feel as though we know each other, considering the response we've had on our Facebook page today, I thought that it might be a good idea for us to spend this hour, as the president suggested, reflecting and making sure that our reflection is worthy of those that we have lost. I, for the first time probably, because I'm a bit of a news junkie, didn't watch any commentary after the memorial service last night. I just turned off the television and thought about all of these issues, because there are so many of them, and so many of them really have touched us rather deeply. Of course, in Washington yesterday, there was to have been a partisan debate over health care. That did not happen. Instead, there was a day-long series of tributes, ending with the House passing a resolution to honor the victims. The Speaker of the House, John Boehner, said, "We know that we gather here without distinction of party. The needs of the institution have always risen above partisanship." And the president last night saying, "If this tragedy prompts reflection and debate, as it should, and of course, as it has already on this program and will in the future, let's make sure that it's worthy of those we have lost. Let's make sure it's not on the usual plane of politics and point scoring and pettiness that drifts away with the next news cycle." So we're going to open our phone lines this hour. It just seems like the proper thing to do. Hour number two of our program, we go back in history to the first president of this country, George Washington. Ron Chernow has written a biography that covers George Washington's life from cradle to grave. It's a very large work and is a definitive work on a man who has we don't know that much about him, so that will be a great hour. Here's our phone number for you to join the conversation. And there may be a guest you would like to have us include in our discussion about what this tragedy in Tucson means for this country. So feel free to go that direction. But let's keep our open line for another day. I just don't think we're quite ready to go there. Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. And our email address, you can use that, is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org, for you to join our conversation. We have quite a few emails that have come in on Facebook. Nanette on Facebook wrote, "Mr. Obama rightly focused on the victims, offering touching details about each of the six who were killed. He also publicly thanked the many heroes that day and urged us to look at ways to be heroes in our everyday lives. For me, it was like watching one giant loving hug, 14,000 Americans strong. I will remember this speech for a long time to come." On the other hand, Michael on Facebook wrote, "It is gross negligence that the memorial service is being used as a political stunt by the Democrats. Why was their general public invited? Why is Obama on a stage and in front of a podium? There is not clapping, whistling, or screaming at a memorial service. I am ashamed to say I am an American." Well, this is America, so we will welcome all of your points of view this hour, and it will be interesting to see where we are at the end of the hour compared to where we are at the beginning of this hour. Rhonda Fanning is answering your phone calls. Chat with her for a moment, and we'll get you on the air. 800-486-8655 is our number. Eugene from Viola is our first caller. Hi, Eugene.
Good morning, Kathleen. I think one angle they haven't taken, that's the teachers. They had to deal with those students and talk to the parents afterwards. I had to do that twice in a lifetime. Once a father got killed in an automobile accident, and I had the children in school. And the second one, one student committed suicide.
Oh, my.
And that's been 40 years, and it's still with me today.
Mm-hmm.
And the teachers would have to talk to Christina's parents.
Right, and all of Christina's classmates,
all of them. And take all those things out of the desk and give them back to report cards.
Yeah. The president mentioned, of course, all of the victims, and when I knew that he was going to talk about Christina last, I knew I wouldn't be able to hold back the tears.
Yep.
Because
same was true here.
Yeah, she and his comments, how we can make our democracy as good as she imagined it would be. That's a profound thing. I'm
Thanks.
Sorry you had to deal with that. That's
yeah, much.
It's hard. Thank you. Thanks very much for your call. Let's go next to Sheila from Green Bay. Hi, Sheila.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to say I was very happy that the president mentioned that some of this could be due to the inadequacy of our medical health system. And I think the point we really need to be discussing is it seems like in our society no one really talks about people that are insane. Or I just thought that was a very important point, and I really think that's what we all should be talking about, is the fact that this man was mentally ill. Thank you.
Yes, thanks very much for the call. I saw a news report this week about a mobile mental health service that Tucson has that not very many people know about, and it would have been a very good thing if this very troubled young man had been able to avail himself of those services, and if somebody in the school had known about them and made that kind of connection for him, that would have been a very good thing. Gene in Oshkosh is next. Hi, Gene.
Hey, good morning, Kathleen.
Hi.
There are a number of things we could talk about, but one thing that really bothered me, not the speech. I thought the speech was brilliant. It was subtle. It covered many points that needed to be covered without hitting somebody on the head with a 2x4.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted comments about the speech. And public television had, I believe, three people, and that's fine, but they had been on prior to the speech and really had said, all they could say was similar things that they had said before. So I started wondering, NBC, ABC, CBS, et cetera, and nothing. There was no coverage, no analysis, no comments about what I thought was a brilliant speech by the President of the United States. Do you know, Kathleen, whether other stations carried an analysis of the speech?
I just briefly went to CNN to MSNBC, I didn't know all the networks were carrying this last night, and Rhonda went to Fox, and I heard somebody say about a sentence, and I thought, I don't want to hear anybody analyze this. I just, I'm really moved by what has happened here, and they have been moved by the whole conversation and all the conversations that it brings forward, and I turned off the television, which I never do, Gene, but I did this time, because the enormity of what happened and what it says for our democracy and for these people's lives. And it was just too much. I just needed to sit there. And so I did.
I understand. And I thank you. And you stay well.
Yes. Thank you, Gene. Thanks very much for your call.
Thank you, Kathleen.
Let's go next to Dan in Franksville. Hi, Dan.
I thought the speech was well. I mean, everything about it, I think, was really a knock out of the ballpark. But I'm afraid that as far as I go, I think I know too much, so I couldn't really enjoy it as much as maybe a typical American, because I sort of know the background of what goes on politically. I mean, they talk about violence. I mean, this is almost like when Clinton was talking about, you know, the violence that was going on, was it with Waco or something like that, why they're bombing Kosovo or something like that, and all the drone strikes and Iraq and killing. I mean, you've seen how upset people were there, over six people. Can you imagine all the parents, children, grandparents and stuff that have been, you know, that have been killed in Iraq? I think they're talking about something like a million dead, even if it's 400,000 dead civilians. I mean, look how this is how human beings react. So I don't know. He says, you know, we should, you know, try and communicate better. I mean, I don't know. It just, you know, but as far as it was really good. But if you know too much, it's not going to ring a bell. But I may be good for the nation, but I don't think much can change, because I think if you want to control people, you have to keep them divided, because human beings are the same animal, and they communicate very, very well.
Okay, thank you, Jan, for your call. John Boehner, the Speaker of the House, said, as I said at the beginning of the hour, we know that we gather here without distinction of party. The needs of the institution have always risen above partisanship. And I guess that this is something we'll be talking about in the future. Do you believe that we're going to return to partisanship and all we need to do is wait for the next news cycle for that to happen? Or is there some fairly deep soul searching that's taking place as a result of this? Is it an event in American history that will stay with you, and do you believe should stay with our elected officials to change the discourse, to make America and American democracy as good as Christine imagined that it was and would be in her lifetime, which has ended? 800-486-8655 is the number. Paul in Duluth is next. Hi, Paul.
Good morning, Kathleen. I called in the last hour because it was kind of a funny show about what white people like. So I wasn't going to do it. But since you're doing this program, I want to reiterate what you said that you did. You listened to the speech. You turned off the TV and you didn't listen to any of the follow-up or dissection. And that's exactly what I did.
Did you?
And I'll tell you, I think I slept better last night than I have since last Saturday. I didn't quite realize how deeply upset and disturbed I was about all that went on that day. And it made me really glad that I voted for Barack Obama. He showed us that he is a leader, and I hope things change. I don't know that they will, but
So you fear that we'll be back to the same partisan deal soon?
Well, I remember other incidents where, you know, Columbine and going forward, it seems like it makes a big. There's a big to do about like mental health care and gun control and, you know, the media. It always seems to go back to square one. I don't know if it's going to change this time, but I sure hope it does.
Mm-hmm. So do I. Thank you, Paul.
Thank you.
Let's go next to Mark in Mineral Point. Hi, Mark.
Yeah. Hi, Kathleen.
Hi, Mark.
I think that President Obama did a good job as healer at this point. That's, I think, the role of the president in this situation. But I wanted to bring up two points. One is that the people who say we shouldn't talk about anything besides the mental health services problem, I think, are being disingenuous, because I think we need to talk about both the problem of not getting the service, mental health services, the people that need it, and this culture of attack and violence and politics through sort of trash talk that we, you know, see from people like Sarah Palin. But I wanted to bring up another point, and that is that if you think about the people who are saying right now that that the right-wingers aren't at all to blame for this, it's totally unfair. These are the same people and their allies and their successors who desperately attempted to keep Martin Luther King, his birthday, from being a national holiday. And I think not only was there a racial dimension to that effort to prevent the national holiday, but it was also that basically a lot of these people fundamentally disliked the idea of a peaceful process and nonviolent strategies, you know, because they're the same people that push the military budget and are, you know, in bed with all the big military contractors. So, I mean, I think there are a lot of issues worth talking about here. But I do think that, that Obama did a good job as trying to, you know, kind of promote a healing process last night. And I think that was his job to do. And I mm-hmm. think he did a pretty good job.
Yeah. And I think people of most political persuasions will agree with you that he did do that last night. Thanks for the call. I would agree with Mark that we will eventually, and because we move so rapidly in this country, that the issues of mental health services, we hope, will stay with us for some period of time, and the issue of violence in our society. I'm always struck by people who were in the civil rights movement and who are members of Congress and who witnessed the incredible violence of that particular decade, which I lived in, and you can remember it if you lived through it, as though it were yesterday, and it was an incredibly violent period in American life. People died for their liberties, for the right to vote. People were lynched. It wasn't that long ago in American society. So there is a threat of violence that runs through this society, and it seems to me as though it's a very large issue for us to discuss. But, of course, we will discuss it, and we'll discuss it here. And people will discuss the issue, as they will mental health, as they will guns. Thanks, Mark, very much for the call. Let us go next to Lori from Port Washington. Hi, Lori.
Hi. I'm just calling. I watched the memorial service last night and was very, very moved by it. But there was a question in my mind about the appropriateness of having political figures reading from a Bible at this service. And I know it's a memorial service, but it seemed to only represent one specter of faith for a very diverse nation. And I just was wondering what your thoughts on that are.
Well, you had a Native American, though, as well, do a blessing at the beginning of the program. So that was bringing it into other areas.
I guess my feeling, too, was like if they had people of faith reading those, it would strike me as different than our political figures.
Yeah, that's interesting. I hadn't thought about that, and I'll contemplate what you said. I thought I was surprised, too. I didn't think they were going to read from the Old and New Testament. But in some ways, it seemed appropriate because it was a memorial service and because
right.
the Bible speaks to those big questions in life. So that seemed appropriate. But I see what you mean, that it was an unusual thing. I don't know. Let's find out if other people were somewhat troubled by that.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks very much for the call.
You bet.
For those of you who did not see the service, Janet Napolitano, head of Homeland Security, read from the Old Testament, and Eric Holder, Attorney General, read from the New Testament last night in their remarks. Thanks to Lori for the call. We have one line open if you'd like to join us, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Steve on Facebook says this in response to somebody else who said he was ashamed to be an American after last night. How exactly is the memorial service a political stunt? Democrats and Republicans were both present and spoke. Neither talked about politics. If you're ashamed to be an American because our leader came and spoke to people sympathetically, you may be a little misguided on what it means to be an American. Dennis from Loyal is next. Hi, Dennis.
Hey, good morning.
Hi.
Say, I hope about 6-8 months down the road you'll have a speaker, you know, who can put this in a historical perspective. My understanding is the political discourse in the 1800s makes today pale. And I don't know how the politicians have co-opted an event like this into a discussion on the political discourse as opposed to the mental health issues. And I know people are upset that they should be talking just about mental health, but that, in my essence, or from what I understand, was the genesis of what went on here, not the political discourse.
Well, except that he tried to assassinate a member of Congress and killed a federal judge. So a political discourse is there, isn't it, because of who he targeted?
No, I don't believe so. I don't believe so. Again, what's the underlying cause of this individual's, which we don't know yet, but it's been said that it's been a mental issue not to do with politics. The federal judge happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. You know, to bring that into it, I think, again, is a misnomer. But what I'm saying, Joy, is down the road, when all the dust is settled, let's have someone take a rational look at this as opposed to an emotional, which is obviously what we're hearing now. But I'm just hoping that, you know, you'll have a program that'll be well advertised so we can hear down the road someone who can take a look at it after the fact.
Okay, thanks, Dennis, very much for the call. More phone calls momentarily. The number is 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. We thought after all the discussions, and I think we've had some meaningful ones this week about the events in Tucson last Saturday and the many levels of conversation. It brings up a lot of levels of conversation and has, and we will continue those, but we had scheduled an open line, and then we thought after the service last night, knowing this audience, that many of you would like to speak with other members of this audience to take in what you heard. And so that's what we're doing this hour. Hour number two of the program, a wonderful book about the first president of our country, George Washington. Ron Chernow will be joining us. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Here are a couple more of our Facebook comments. Several people were a little concerned about the applause that was taking place. I must say I was a little concerned about that, too, the poignancy of what was being said and the enormity of the event didn't always mesh with probably the setting of where this took place and the very, very loud applause, which I found a little bit jarring. A couple of people wrote about that. And here is what they said. Tina in Wanakee said, blame the individuals in the audience for the hooting and hollering, not the president or his party. It sounded like it was from enthusiastic young people who perhaps did not know any better. The president didn't look like he wanted or approved of their outbursts. Linda on Facebook, I agree with Nanette, which we read earlier, believe that the president set a high mark in his presidency with his eloquent speech. I was put off a bit by the cheering in the crowd, but the speech was impressive. And we go next to Mark from Door County. Hi, Mark.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Hi, and thanks for having me.
I
just want to emphasize that the gentleman who was the assassinator, his mental illness his behavior because of mental illness is extremely rare. In other words, when you see this picture of this young man with his bald head glaring out at us from the screen, and people say this man has a mental illness, it's important to point out, I think, that people who have mental illness, especially if they're appropriately treated, are hardly ever violent like this special case. As long as people can have treatment and have the appropriate treatment, this is extremely unlikely for insane people to do, for mentally ill people to do. I know that at times, remember in a neighborhood I used to live in where an open piece of land, there was going to be a Bellin Mental Health Center was going to be built, and everybody in that neighborhood, to my chagrin, petitioned to refuse to have it in their backyard because, well, there'll be people that are insane but be driving into our neighborhood. That kind of prejudice against mentally ill people, it needs to be addressed in this situation as well. That people who are appropriately treated will hardly ever react like this. It's extremely rare.
And it is another of the tragedies here that he was not able, when people saw his exhibition of severe problems, that he wasn't able, as far as we know, to link to some treatment, which obviously was there in Tucson, but it didn't happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Mark, for your call.
Welcome.
Mm-hmm. We go next to Joe from Lafarge. Hi, Joe.
Hello. I've been around a while and have seen a lot of these assassinations, and I think that it really began to escalate after the Republicans took over. Newt Gingrich advised them to use language like sick, demented, evil, and in regard to Democrats, and never to speak civilly of any Democrats. And I'd just like to suggest a book called Hate Politics and Thank Newt Gingrich by Michael Rappaport. I think he'd be a good guest. And I also would like to suggest Jerry Spence, Chris Hedges, and Derek Jensen as guests.
Okay, thank you for your call. Let's go to Sharon in Green Bay. Hi, Sharon. Are you there, Sharon? Sharon is not. Steve in Central Wisconsin. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
I've been watching this since it's happened, and it seems like everybody's pushing their own agenda. Law enforcement did a good job. Politicians, they did nothing wrong. Schools, they kind of covered their tracks. The way I see it is that boy was 22. He was living with his parents. Now, if those parents knew that he was having trouble, and if they knew that he had an automatic pistol, I believe they shouldn't have allowed it, especially in their home. They should have taken the gun away from him, and that money should have been used to get him an apartment or get him some help or whatever. But I think everybody's sidestepping the real issue, and that's that the parents didn't step up and help this boy when he needed it. That's my opinion.
Okay. Well, and it's part of the story that we don't know that much about. I'm sure we'll learn more in the days to come. All indications are that they are heartbroken by this, but who knows the intricacies of family life in that family. We will learn more. Carl is next from Houston, Minnesota. Hi, Carl.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call, and I'm so appreciative of you for putting this show on today because it's so fitting for all we've been through in this country. And I wanted to ask you a question, if I might, about the situation. I feel that the problem is our culture. We have to change our whole violent culture. We've got violence on TV. Violence has been proven from video games, violent video games. We've got violent speech and retaliation in our words. You know, I just feel like we need the peacefulsolution.org. You know, we have to teach peace, forgiveness, compassion, generosity, kindness, love, giving, sacrifice. We need to help people. If you help someone, you make a friend. If you hurt someone, you make an enemy. You know, and so my question is do you feel that we do need to change our culture? And I can take my answer off there. Thank you.
And we can ask the audience that question. Do I believe there's too much violence in our culture? Yes, I do. And I'm sure that most of us do. More emails. This one from Rosalind. I think the whole memorial was beautiful and meaningful. It was on a college campus, not in a church. So that added a different atmosphere that I believe was entirely fitting to the circumstances of the broad spectrum of ages and life situations of all involved in the tragedy. This one from Tammy in response to one caller. Our political leaders can be and often are people of faith, as were at least some of those who died. It does not bother me to see them express their faith and read from the Bible. They don't stop being who they are when they take office and should not have to hide it. And from Joan, I was appalled at the pep rally, campaign rally atmosphere of the memorial service. The cheering and clapping was so out of place. I think that the setting, an athletic auditorium at a college, probably contributed. I feel such empathy for the families of those who died. They must have felt that their loved ones and their sorrow were not being taken seriously. Commentators said this was a release for the community, but I wonder if others felt like it. Felt like I felt, she asks. We go to Bob next from Madison. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Kathleen. Thank you for taking the call. Kathleen, focusing solely on the president's speech last night, I thought it was brilliant. Where he was able to connect the most with me was actually toward the end when he's speaking of Christina Green.
Yes.
And how he called
out himself and each one of us to want to be better than this, you know, to be that, to be the example. And it really, I was telling your screener, I'm in Wisconsin watching this on television, and I'm 40, you know, mid-40s, and I've never actually looked at myself and thought, you know what, he's absolutely right. Where have I been? Why, you know, I should be leading a positive, a more positive example instead of sniping every time it doesn't work out my way. And I thought that President Obama really, really struck a chord with that. I thought the whole speech was excellent. I told your screener I didn't even vote for him. And I'm not saying that that would change over one speech, but he was able to communicate the gravity of the situation, particularly with the young girl, as with all of the victims. But Kathleen, I was like you. I was a little, when I was listening to it, first of all, on NPR, and I thought I was listening to a rally in the first 15 minutes. And then when I finally turned it on television and watched him, he really connected not only with the audience there, but I'll tell you, Kathleen, you said you didn't listen to commentary afterwards. I flipped over, you know, CNN, Fox, MSNBC, and when Fox has positive comments about how this reached, you know, the population, it was a bullet, well, it was right where it needed to be, and where it really hit home, I thought, now that was one of the best speeches I had ever heard from a president. And I'll just take the comments off the air. Thanks, Kathleen.
Thank you. Thanks very much, Bob, for the call. Very interesting. I think a lot of people had that response. No matter where you are politically, the president did know, as other presidents have during times of national tragedy, been able to say exactly the right thing. And I think this president, in a situation that was difficult because you were in this auditorium with 14,000 people with bright lights and people applauding. It was not an easy place to give that kind of totally heartfelt speech, but he was able certainly to accomplish that. And the detail of the lives of all the people who had died and the heroism from those who had, you know, been able to rush to his boss, the young man, Hernandez, and save her life, essentially. I mean, there's so much in this, and I think that the president was able to understand that and to communicate that, all that was involved in this, in this call. That's interesting that Bob said that he's looking at his own life. Did other people have that response, that are you doing enough to love other human beings and to quit the griping sometimes? If he was able to accomplish that and reach to a whole American public, and people responded that way, then he certainly did more than what was not required, but more than what he came to do perhaps yesterday. And the thing that stays with me, too, is the story about Christina Green, who, you know, by it just tears your heart out to have all of it does, but this young girl who's interested in democracy and maybe wants to be in Congress and is playing Little League and is bright and enthusiastic and on the student council. You know, for her to be killed going to see a member of Congress is, you know, makes you cry. Our number is 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our number two of our program, What a Look at George Washington. Ron Chernow will be our guest. His book is Washington, A Life, from when he was born to when he died. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Email, if you'd like to use that, is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. Bill in Madison is next. Hi, Bill.
Yes, thank you. I think there's been very little touching on what I believe is the real issue I think discourse is only a symptom of our behaviors. It may have triggered something, but the shooter did not engage in discourse. He acted. And I think we only have to look at Congress and what they're teaching us. They're teaching us on both sides of the aisle that if we don't agree with them, they exclude us. They've excluded almost all moderates of the parties, both of them. They're both excluding moderates, and so they say, if you don't agree with our fundamentals, we exclude you. And you look at one of the guests on one of the programs yesterday was saying that most Americans are moderates. Well, they are. Most Americans are independents. They're not in either party any longer. Everybody has gotten out of the parties. Both parties obstruct the others. How many times have both parties been in negotiations for bills, but then when it comes down to voting for the bill, they both party lines? They're obstructing. It's the behavior behind all this that causes the discourse. And if you want to get back to the shooter, he had some sort of behavior, and maybe this is the only way he could strike out. So he wanted to exclude. I mean, it reminds me of the old pogo poster. It should be put up in Congress. We have met the enemy, and he is us. You know, I think Congress needs to take a serious look at them, their behaviors, and how we compromise with each other, how we get away from fundamentals and include everyone. It's time for Americans to take back the parties.
Thank you, Bill, for your call. John is next in Burlington. Hi, John.
Hi. I started to watch it. My wife and I started to watch it, and we both looked at each other and couldn't get past the fact that people were cheering. And this, you know, had I not known the subject, I would have assumed it was a campaign rally. And I think they could have had a venue for this after the event. The politicians and everybody could have made their statements and done their speeches. But to coordinate it with this, I just found it really kind of troublesome that, you know, that it became that. And I turned it off because I couldn't believe it. Reminded me of the clip I saw when Pat Tillman's funeral, when his brother came up and said, you know, boldly said, don't, you know, John McCain or someone said something about he's with God now. And his brother said, you know, you didn't know my brother. You can't speak for where he is. He, you know, Pat didn't believe in God. And it kind of made me think of that. Like, can these families mourn, or is it have to be on the public stage? You know, I mean, so that's my comment.
So you missed the speech?
Yes, I couldn't watch it. I just felt like it was too political to be. They can do politics later. I just thought, you know, there was a serious matter, and I thought it should have been done in a serious way.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, John, very much for the
call.
Mm-hmm. We go to Lois from Chippewa Falls. Hi, Lois.
Hi. Thanks a lot for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I just have two comments. One is in reference to the person who did not like the Bible readings. I'm one of these who felt very, very comforted by the Bible readings. I'm a Christian, and I've gone through these Bible verses several times, and it really uplifted me that they did this. I'm very, very happy. The other comment was, we're getting a lot of complaints about how cheering people were, and I have to agree, there was too much of that. But we also have to consider where it came from, why they were cheering. Why did they have it in this place? There's so many angles to this. This was probably the best that could be done at this time. So let's, like everything else in politics, let's look at both sides of the issue and talk about this and realize this in a sensible manner. This is what we need in the United States, is to talk to one another, get each other's feelings, and then go about making it better. Just as President Obama said, we have to work together and make sure that our kids have the same goals and are able to attain what little Christine wanted to. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Lois. Thanks for the call. Bobby in Stevens Point. Hi.
Hi, Kathleen. Hey,
hi,
thanks,
Bobby,
for doing this show and not moderating and just letting people self-express. That's great. I just caught the other day like a two-paragraph article that in the process of trying to balance their budget, Arizona had cut something like 50% out of mental health services. And I think that shows something about our priorities and how they do have consequences, so to speak, because if you have enough staff to do mental health counseling in a place like a community college or, you know, even in high school, and you see someone developing sort of dangerous symptoms, you know, a personality disorder that can get out of control if left unchecked, then maybe this young man could have gotten some help early on and gone in a different direction. But, you know, I think we're going to see this all over the country that, there have been tough fiscal times. You know, conservative people are calling for, be tough on law enforcement and things that are touchy-feely and liberal-sounding, like mental health services, tend to get the axe first. And, you know, I think we should think about where that's going to lead us, because if you look at youth today, they're under tremendous stressors. The economic situation is really bad for young people. And going forward, I don't see it getting any easier, you know. So that's the angle I think we ought to look at with these situations, is just what are our priorities and what will that lead to.
Thanks for
letting us vent, so to speak.
Yeah, I thought it was necessary today. Thank you very much, Bobby, for the call. And we will do a show probably one day next week. We will look at, obviously, one of the conversations that needs to happen is mental health services and what's happened with them. It affects so many people. It's not a stigma. It shouldn't be anymore in our society, because so many people suffer from mental illness. All of us do. We do during the course of our lifetimes, most of us. Thanks, Bobby, for the call. Hugh in Milwaukee, hello.
Hi, let me take the other side. I'm going to read a sentence from a wonderful article by Michelle Malkin. She's talking about the sheriff, the liberal Democratic sheriff of the area, who immediately blamed Rush Limbaugh and Fox News for the end. As Dubnyk, that's his name, as Dubnyk himself has now admitted, Lochner, the assassin, leveled death threats against others that were investigated by law enforcement and then apparently shrugged off. Also, Pima County College campus police reported 5 serious confrontations with a mentally unstable young man before he was kicked out. But nothing was done. Why didn't the sheriff do it? Instead of worrying about the mental health facilities, here's a guy who is a bully. He's threatening to kill people. He should have been apprehended by law enforcement, but they did nothing. It's a liberal, you know, the liberal approach of the sheriff. They should apprehend somebody who's threatening violence to other people. Pat Buchanan has a wonderful article on this. He notes it in 33 when some nut tried to assassinate the newly elected President Roosevelt. Within 2 weeks, he was found guilty. And then when Mayor Cermak of Chicago died, he was retried and he was executed within a month or so.
Hugh, what did you were you moved by the service that took place last night? Were you moved by what the president said?
What's that?
Were you moved at all by the service last night?
To be honest, I would have watched it, but I had plans already, so I couldn't watch that. But, I assume that it was a good speech and so forth. But we are partisan. It's clear that Obama is a Democrat. I voted to get rid of Obamacare. Well, we had violence. When people remember one guy, an opponent of Obama, had his finger bitten off by one of the goons from one of the unions. We had a black Tea Partier who was beaten up by union thugs. When you oppose Obamacare, we've had violence. Obama himself said, if they bring knives, we bring guns.
Okay. Thank you, Hugh, for your comments. Let's go to Mike in Portage. Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to just get everybody back on track of what you wanted to really chit-chat about, and that was what we thought of the speech last night. And I thought Obama did a very, very good job. Whether you voted for him or not, we should keep in mind that he is our president, whether and he represents us and speaks for us, no matter if we're in a memorial service or China or Russia or anywhere else. And I thought it was a very good speech, and I can't say that I wouldn't have been cheering at some of the high points of his speech, especially comments that were made in his speech towards the little girl that lost her life. My other point is that maybe somebody should think about, or some people should think, that for days now, including NPR last night, I listened to a show about what do you think Obama's going to talk about? Is he going to make a political? Is he going to, and several other Good Morning America for days now have been talking about what Obama was going to do, if he was going to keep it personal and close to the vest, so to speak, or was he going to turn it into a political deal? And I think everybody's kind of sharpshooting him because we had it already predisposed in our heads that we were looking for what he was going to say as opposed to why we were even having the service at all. And that's all I'd like to say, and thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Mike, for your call. We go next to another Mike from Fond du Lac. Hi, Mike.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to weigh in on Steve from Central Wisconsin's comments about this young man's parents making the blanket assumption that his parents are somehow to blame for this and didn't do enough or should have done more. May be true. I don't know that, but it may also not be. And such a blanket assumption, I think, is irresponsible. My wife and I raised a beautiful young man who was became increasingly tormented by mental illness over the course of a number of years, and we tried in 100 different ways to get him help and et cetera. Fortunately, he didn't hurt anybody else, but about 4 years ago, he took his own life. And I bristle when I hear people make blanket statements about someone's mental illness being the responsibility of parents.
Yeah. Thank you, Mike. Tom in River Falls. Hi.
Hey, Kathleen.
Hey, Tom.
Yeah, I think this will probably go down as one of the greatest speeches. It was just very moving. But what I've noticed that all the pundits and a lot of people are missing is that I think Obama was alluding to a great speech by Martin Luther King. That speech was called Where Do We Go From Here? It was his last speech before his death for the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, where Obama said, we recognize our own mortality and are reminded that in the fleeting time we have on this earth, what matters is not wealth, status, or power or fame, but rather how well we have loved.
Mm-hmm.
And I think then he goes on to talk about how we align our values with our actions. And I thought of that Martin Luther King speech where he goes on just so beautifully about the relationship between love and power. And if I could, read four lines from that speech.
Okay, sure.
Yeah, at the end it says, what is needed is a realization that power without love is reckless and abusive, and love without power is sentimental and anemic. Power at its best is love implementing the demands of justice, and justice at its best is power correcting everything that stands against love. And that was from Where Do We Go From Here? And I think a lot of the pundits are missing that, where I think that was the most powerful line, which was right out the middle of the speech.
Yeah, I was struck by that line as well. I thought it was an important one. And someone else picked up on that line, too. Lauren, who says in an email to the caller, Bob, who said, everyone needs to stop and look at their own lives. He's absolutely right. I believe that people need to stop pointing fingers at everyone and take a look at everything in a whole. This wasn't a political rally. It wasn't his parents' friends' fault. This was a soul, a disturbed individual that took his anger out on multiple people who didn't deserve it. None of us will know what situation the shooter was in. Stop with the finger pointing. The only thing we can do as a nation is not talk about how united we are, but act it out in our everyday lives and help one another. Okay. Well, I think we are in a slightly different spot than we were at the beginning of this hour. Thank you, everybody, for all of your calls. Feel free to post on our Facebook page as well. We're getting many, many Facebook postings, and we may not keep them up there forever, but we'll give you a chance at least today and tomorrow to post what you're thinking and guide us as to the kinds of programs you'd like to hear in the days ahead as a result of what we've been through this week. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for answering your many phone calls, and thanks for all of your calls this hour, everybody. We have news coming up momentarily from National Public Radio, and then during times like this, I always like to go back into history, and so we're going to learn a whole lot that we never knew because he's been a fairly secretive president. We're going to learn a lot about George Washington the next hour of our program. Ron Chernow is our guest. He has written a very large and extremely readable biography, Washington, A Life. So that's coming up in just a moment. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.